It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
This is Mark Shook, a.k.a. MadMage999 of the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian of the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, I'm Sven, a.k.a. Dr. McCoy. I'm with the Soyuz Project.
And you're listening to the 192nd episode of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, today we're joined by Sven. He's master of the Zeros Project, and it's a project that we're going to be talking about and we have great interest in as Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 aficionados, so to speak. And, you know, us being in the community for so long, you know, this is something that really excites us. So, Sven, thank you for coming on the show.
Sure.
You know, to get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into Neverwinter Nights or in the engine itself and the work that you're doing?
Well, that story has kind of two parts. The first part is me playing Neverwinter Nights in 2003, 2004, thereabouts. And I played the hell out of it. I really loved it. It ran on Linux natively, but the editor didn't. So I thought, hey, I'll write an editor. And I saw that BioWare released specs for their file formats, and I began writing an editor, at least a library that could read and write the file formats, and the plan was to write a user interface on top of that later. But I didn't get around to that because, the code I wrote was a bit crummy and I would have to clean it up and rewrite it, and that felt a bit boring. So instead I joined the Scumbian project, which is a project to reverse engineer and re-implement classic adventure games like Monkey Island and Day of the Tentacle and Broken Sword. So I went with those guys for several years, and I still am a member of the team. And the second part is me in 2010, several years later. I was talking with a friend I made in that project, Clone 2727, and we were talking about Knight of the Old Republic, which I had played, also really loved, and loved it as well. And we were talking about how there should be a Scumbian-like project for BioWare adventures. And I told him how about my editor from years ago, and how I know a bit about how the file formats look and how the engine works. And out of a lark, I then started to write a Scumbian-like project for BioWare games. And yeah, I took some base code from Scumbian and turned it into a project and wrote file format reading classes around it. And that was kind of the seed for it.
Wow. Well, it definitely sounded like it gave you a lot of experience to get kickstarted into a project like this. I mean, with a lot of background in actual writing applications, and file formatting, and all the above.
Yep.
How long have you been working on this project, then?
On and off since 2010. I had some downtimes where I worked more on Scumbian, and I had some times where I worked more on Soyuz, and other projects. I have too many projects where I jump madly from project to project at times.
Wow. So I imagine you got a daytime job too that you're trying to balance.
Yeah, student.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I had a bit more free time then.
Yeah, I was really excited to hear about that somebody was doing this because, you know, I love all these games that the engine covers.
Yeah, me too.
Pretty much. I know there's a lot of info on your site, Zorios.org. Can you summarize the project for someone who hasn't heard of it?
Well, it's kind of a re-implementation of the BioWare Aurora engine games, starting with Neverwinter Nights up to Dying Age 2. And we plan to basically replace the .exe file, the executable, and have the user provide the game data. And then Zorios can play the game and on all manner of systems, not just Windows, but also Linux and Mac OS X, and maybe even portable devices like phones and tablets.
Huh. So have you started any work for phones or tablets, or is that just something you'd like to do at some point?
Yeah, that's something for the future.
Okay.
I don't even have a phone or a tablet where I could run that, but it's a plan for the future.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely awesome. Yeah, you have a long list of games on the Zorius, you know, that you could conceivably support with. Are you focused on any one in particular? And we talked about a lot of them, but is there one that really stands out to you that you want to hit first or really hit hard?
Well, I mostly focused on Neverwinter Nights and Knights of the Old Republic, because I know the most about Neverwinter Nights. And KOTOR is kind of the game that started this iteration of the project. So these are the two I mostly focused on.
So you've already working on two games as your main focus.
Yep.
If you had assistance from the Neverwinter Nights 2 community, would you be averse to working on Neverwinter Nights 2 support more?
Well, I would like to see it working in SOAS, of course. But there's, of course, only so much I can focus on. And there are several third-party middleware that needs to be reverse engineered for Neverwinter Nights 2, like Dwenny and FaceFX and SweetTree. And there's some weird broken XML files in Neverwinter Nights 2 that make up the GUI. Mm-hmm. So that's some weird things I have put off for now.
So it's really going to depend on how much you are able to get with those things.
Yeah.
How much progress you can make.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think, you know, from our understanding of Neverwinter Nights 2, which is rather extensive too, you're right about a lot of the third-party stuff that's really hampered custom to content development for the Neverwinter Nights 2 community. I mean, ever since its inception, really, especially with not so much SpeedTree, but with the granny animations and stuff like that, you know, that's really hampered custom model development and things like that, because it's not like you can just pull up a copy of, you know, Granny 3D and start cracking out models. It don't work that way, and that's a shame, because there are so many like more standardized applications that do that, especially, you know, if you look at like 3DS Max and some of the other stuff that's being used. I mean, it's a shame that those weren't used instead, because at least there would have been a lot, it'd be a lot easier to get involved with, you know, you wouldn't have to reverse engineer stuff. It would just be standard and you'd be ready to rock and roll. But
exactly.
Yep. I fully hear you. And the XML, like when you bring up the GUI system, I mean, that, you know, we've done a lot of custom GUI work for our Persistent World, and I will say that it's a disaster to work with. I mean, it undocumented features. I mean, it's not really XML, even though they say it is. It doesn't conform to standard XML standards.
Yeah, so, I couldn't just use a standard XML parsing library. I do have to write my own, because the standard library would just throw errors left and right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you can't use XPath on that at all. Yeah. It'll crap the bed immediately on the way they terminate their tags and stuff. So, yeah, it is. It's a shame, like some of the stuff like that. I mean, if they had done a little bit more work, it would have been a lot better. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, like Mark reached out to you and was talking to you about some of the stuff, because those are types of things that, honestly, if we could actually fix, you know, that, or they would actually fix, somebody pick up the project again and make some, you know, final adjustments to if they spent a couple months on with a Kickstarter to fix stuff like the GUI and maybe working on getting some kind of publicly available utilities to handle the effects or even application libraries that are publicly available, you know, would be highly, you know, advantageous, but it's always fun there. So, well, moving on, Zorius seems to be being developed under Linux, and I think you said you wanted to bring it to other platforms, which you just talked about. Does Zorius run under Windows, or how hard do you think would it be for a Windows dev to contribute to the project?
Well, it does run under Windows. I cross-compiled it with a MingGW cross-compiler onto Windows, and it runs. And you can also compile this like that on Windows. You just have to use MingGW, because our project is the build system is AutoTools based. Wizard Studio wouldn't work. That's one of the problems, because Windows devs like to use Wizard Studio, and unfortunately, this doesn't work like that with Zorius.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a possibility. ScumVM has a small program, MakePod, that parses the make files and spits out a Wizard Studio project file. So someone could theoretically adapt MakeProject to parse our AutoTools make files and create a Wizard Studio project file, and then people with Wizard Studio could develop Zorius.
Wow, that's really cool. I mean, you know, something, you know, when you talk about the projects, how did you approach the engine without having the source code to it? I mean, just by having the disassembly or the compiled product? How were you able to even approach this project?
Mostly interestingly, this is guesswork.
Uh-huh.
And just taking the files as they are and modifying them and looking what the original games would do with modified files.
Uh-huh.
I did disassemble Neverwinter Nights a bit, but I haven't looked that far into it.
Okay.
But that would be something I have to do in the future for some more complex things.
Yep, yep. I mean, that's something that I know I had briefly looked into myself because I was working on NWNX for plugins. Mm-hmm. And the biggest hurdle that I found with, because it's in a rough sense of speaking, the NWNX team has done something very similar to what you're trying to, what you're, you know, succeeding with, but they did it from an aspect of replacing out game functions by rerouting them, you know, rerouting the function pointers and then but the fact of the matter is to find the addresses of those functions, I mean, I can only imagine the dirty work that had to be done to do that, you know, and that's why I really tip my hat to you for your work because it's...
Wouldn't those function pointers always change on new patch versions?
Yep.
And
they did. And as a matter of fact, every time that there was a patch created for Neverwinter Nights 2, what they do is they rebuild the app into a different version.
Yeah, of course.
So as soon as it's built, the address is all changed for the entry point for the application. So, you know, so they had to actually change all the plugins. You know, there's a constant that they use in the plugin shell that you have to change and recompile the plugin to run under that proper, you know, that build. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, here's a query that comes up. If it was ever released, the source code to Neverwinter Nights 1 engine or 2, would that greatly speed up your progress?
Well, that would depend on the license, because my project is GPL license, and if that license for the original source code would prohibit inclusion, that wouldn't really help me at all.
Uh-huh. Yep. I'm kind of unfamiliar with the licensing aspect of it. You know, I'm looking at more just from a functional standpoint, you know, you know, if something would actually speed things up or whatever. I mean, it's something that, you know, we will be doing over the next, you know, 4 or 5 months that, you know, we're going to be working on talking to individuals at the, you know, we already have contacts at Obsidian. But I don't think it's really coming down to Obsidian at this point. It's coming down to the Atari and some other individuals who own the licenses to the product. Because I know that Obsidian, for a fact, was very interested in doing more work with Neverwinter Nights 2, but they weren't able to. So
well, BioWare got bought by Electronic Arts, as far as I'm aware. So the rights for the game might partially lie at Electronic Arts and partially at Atari because of the Dungeons & Dragons license, so that's probably quite complicated.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, really, because there's a lot could be done there, but yeah, what are you going to do? Another thing, too, that's another major benefit of the work that you're doing is because you're doing it how you're handling with your licensing model, and the, you know, that's what I think is really impressive about the way you approached it. So,
by the way, I think Neverwinter Nights NWNX4 is GPL as well.
Which project? What?
NWNX4.
Okay, yeah, that would be compatible with my project.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that if the source code was released that it would be okay because of the licensing issues, but just, you know, you mentioned before about how you looked around in the Neverwinter Nights 2 community and saw a lot of people just putting up binaries and they didn't have open source or anything like that, and that's not completely true. NWNX4 is one of the biggies, and I think they're working under GPL, too.
Hmm. Yeah, I found sources for some of the tools, and one person even emailed me his sources for one project. I don't currently remember what it was, but that was really great. But some other people were not so helpful and only put up binaries and didn't react to emails or even saying, no, I won't release the source code. That's a bit sad.
Yeah. No, I know that. I mean, like I was talking to briefly before about working on NWNX4 plugins, so, yeah, the fact of the matter, it's the same as for 2. I mean, they're it's the same technology. It's just one was built for Neverwinter Nights 1 engine, one was built for Neverwinter Nights 2. It's no different, really. But the fact of the matter is that, like, a lot, there are more than a handful of commonly used plugins that you can't get the source code to. So how the hell do you know that it's doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing? Yeah. You really don't. And, you know, that's one of the challenges of working with that type of a product versus, like, something that you're doing, which is publicly available. And, you know, you are posting the details regularly about what you've done already. And that makes the transparency very good. And as well as, you know, people who might want to contribute or, you know, be able to contribute, it makes it a lot easier for them to even say, hey, you know, I think I'm pretty qualified to help you out with this, because otherwise, how would they even know that they would even have the skill set to be able to help you?
How does Zorios work with regard to the original game's IP? I assume you require a valid copy of the game that you're emulating, or?
Yeah, of course. Like the Scandium project, we do not support piracy. Every user has to provide their own original game data from original game media or legal downloads, and have to point Zorios at this data. We do not support piracy. As soon as we find out that you use a pirated game, we will stop talking to you.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, you have to do that.
Yeah, otherwise we'll get in big trouble.
Yeah, you don't need that. You don't need that. That's for sure. You know, we talked about other individuals in the community offering, you know, binaries and different things like that. Do you offer or plan to offer binaries for Zorios?
Of course, but that's in the future. Right now, the project isn't really useful for only users, for non-coders, so it really wouldn't make any sense to provide any binaries. But in the future, I would like to, of course, provide binaries for all manner of systems, just like, for example, the Scandium does.
Very cool.
What's the best way for non-coders to contribute to the project? Is there other stuff that they could be doing, like legwork, you know, research, finding things for you, or?
Yeah, no, I'm really not sure non-coders could do anything useful right now, unfortunately. Right now we desperately need coders, and we need a person who has OpenGL knowledge, because my OpenGL knowledge is pretty limited, pretty basic, and pretty obsolete. So we need someone who can whip out my OpenGL code and write their own code, either in completely own engine, or adapt an existing engine to work with the Aurora data. But non-coders, I'm not really sure they could do anything right now, unfortunately.
Not even if they could go look up things about OpenGL or do research on that for you? I mean, I guess you know, they would, in order to understand it and be able to find anything useful, they'd kind of have to have some coder knowledge anyway, so.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, I know what I don't know, and I know that I don't know a lot of OpenGL, of current OpenGL knowledge, and I don't have a lot of current OpenGL knowledge, and I don't think I really could learn that in a useful time span to work on that part of the project.
Yeah, it makes. And for those who don't know, can you give a brief description of what OpenGL is?
OpenGL is a graphics library. Basically, speaks to the graphics card and tells it what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Direct3D on Windows, but OpenGL is portable and works on Windows, on Linux, on Mac OS X, and on FreeBSD, on OpenBSD. On Android.
It works on Android too, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a good cross-platform product. It's that, unlike DirectX.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of the game is, you know, was built with DirectX, not OpenGL, so.
Except for Neverwinter Nights 1, that was using OpenGL, at least for Linux and for Mac.
There has been a lot of work with Linux with Neverwinter Nights 1. I know that, you know, as far as it being rebuilt for 64-bit and a couple other things. I know that there were things that were able to be done there, but I don't know how that was done. You know, I never was able to really get any direct answers of how the community was able to get a hold of, you know, the stuff to be able to recompile it as 64-bit, unlike Neverwinter Nights 2, which you can't, which we're at least, I'm not saying it can't be, but it hasn't been, and stuff like that. That makes a big difference too. You know, having a 32-bit versus a 64-bit engine is a huge difference, especially, you know, for persistent world runners. I know that it's really outside the scope of what you're working on, but, you know, from our standpoint, you know, being limited, the application being limited to 3.0 two something gigabytes of RAM versus versus 16 or more, you know, there's a big difference there, not to mention the performance gains that you'd get, you know, from that, or even multi-processor capabilities. And that actually brings a little side topic up. Now, the work that you're doing, are you changing the way that processor consumption is being done, the CPU consumption, whereas like the current games, they can only utilize one core of the CPU? Or the work that you're doing, are you be able to build cross-core like other stuff, like even like a database engine or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, the code is already running multi-threadedly. A bit limited because OpenGL stuff all has to be done in one thread. So there's some inter-process communication going on between the game thread and the main thread where the graphics is done. But it is running on multiple cores.
Yes, that's huge. I mean, that's a definitely huge benefit, because I know that's another pet peeve in the Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 community, is the fact that the game can only run on one CPU. Well, that goes for the server as well. The server's stuck to one core, too. You can set the affinity for multiple cores, but the sum of operations will never go over 100% for the combined total of both cores, or three cores, or whatever. You know, it'll stick. You know, so if you split it over two cores, it'd be 50-50 at max. You know, 50 on core X and 50 on core Y, and not 100-100, you know. So that's something that it definitely is benefit. Another benefit to your project is actually improved performance as well, or at least the potential for improved performance.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right now, not really.
Yeah.
In fact, my OpenGL code is so cruddy that it constantly breaks down into single-digit frames and frames per seconds, and that's not really that good.
No, but that's something, like you said before, if you are able to get better resources, or even, you know, somehow you're able to get your OpenGL knowledge to a point where, you know, you become more efficient or proficient with it, that, you know, yeah, I can see something like that easily being remedied, you know, as you get, that is complicated. I have looked at it before too, so it's not exactly something you just pick up in 2 minutes and you're off to the races. It's not C#, you know, so, you know, from a coder standpoint. Do you have plans to, you know, do a little bit more like social media or marketing about Zerios? Like right now you have your site and different things like that, but do you have any other methods beyond what we're doing here today that you're planning on doing?
Not really. I'm not a promotion person. I don't really know how to do this, and that's really not my thing. If someone else wants to do it, great, but I'm too shy for that.
Well, you're making a big step here coming on the show, because we're going to be brought, this will be, you know, pretty heavily seen, you know, from the Neverwinter Nights community as well as the Neverwinter community, because we do cover Neverwinter as well on a semi-official basis, especially with the Cryptic PR, Perfect World PR team. So, I mean, it's definitely, we get a lot of traffic coming from that way too. So I'm sure that from their millions and millions of players, somebody would definitely find some interest in this. So hopefully, so this is one step for sure. And obviously we will stay in touch with you over the coming years and months and everything. And if you have any updates, you know, this would be a good outlet to do it. Plus the fact that we'll be posting this on our site and all our social media outlets as well.
Great. Thanks. Yep.
No problem.
Yeah, personally, I can't think of anybody who would like to see it succeed more than me and probably a lot of people in the community. What do you think would be the best way for someone to help you get the word out about your project? I mean, I guess that's kind of like you just said, you don't know. You don't really, it's not really your thing to do promotions. So yeah. Maybe, I don't know, maybe just somebody that's good at marketing.
Yeah, that could work if they know how to reach OpenGL coders.
Yeah.
Or more people who are interested in working on the code. Because right now, I don't see the point of getting users involved, because the project isn't really far along enough for that.
Yeah, you're definitely going to need to reach out to people with specific skill sets.
Yeah.
I've got gears in my head turning now.
Yeah, you're right. That's one of those things. I mean, you kind of got to look at a couple things, like what, like if we had the ability to know who was involved with working on the original stuff. I mean, you know, especially the OpenGL stuff, and if they're not under contract, to be able to at least talk about how they approached specific issues or their development approach. You know, I mean, that wouldn't be violating any kind of NDA or anything like that. I mean, at least if there was some way to get some more information or maybe some tips about how to approach things, that would even be helpful.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. We know you mentioned OpenGL is one thing that's kind of a problem area. What other things need special attention?
Well, there's for NeverInternet 2, there would be stuff like Granny and Face of X. For the Dragon Age games, there would be need to research and reverse engineer the FMOD stuff. So it's basically it's a lot of small things that would need to be done.
Is there any problem with like Bink or anything like that, or
with what?
Bink. I think it's the audio
Bink.
Subsystem.
No. Bink is the video subsystem. And we already have that covered because the FFmpeg project already reverse engineered the first Bink version, which covers all of the videos used in the in those games. So videos already work.
That's goodness. Okay.
Yep. There's another area that would need work, which is Sonic the Dark Brotherhood, which is a Nintendo DS game, which I think uses a similar engine, and that has lots of Nintendo DS specific formats, which would need to be reverse engineered. So that's a theoretical vector to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you got a pretty big list of things that would have to be done. I mean, and it's good that you have that indexed and documented what needs to be done, because
I do have a to-do list on the wiki.
Yeah, I was just thinking that this is all broken down pretty well on his site. All the stuff that does and doesn't work and what needs to be done and what the problem areas are and what's working right now. It's all really well done, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one big benefit of putting the legwork in up front, you know, is to handle it that way, to have everything documented out and everything like that. And, you know, something else, too, that I know that may or may not be, you know, something you want to think about would be the Kickstarter project, to actually start a Kickstarter project on this, because getting people to donate their time is probably going to be a lot harder than if there was a way that there could be some kind of a, you know, monetary system that they could get be contracted out with. That's something to think about too, because Kickstarter, you know, you could document your project, get it started up, and hell, before you know, you might have a couple $1 million sitting in there.
Yeah. The problem with that would be that this would approach the commercial vector, and that might be a problem copyright-wise, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that you'd have to do at some kind of an investigation or whatever. I only bring it up because it's definitely something that, because it you know, yeah, you're not marketing to sell it, but to help get it off the ground further and, you know, maybe some more proficient coders involved, you know, in these areas, it would help split the amount of work that would have to be done amongst more people. I mean, one way, maybe. The only reason I bring it up, I see a lot of people going down those roads for all kind of stuff. So
that's actually, you know, if he actually could find a way to do a project like that, either Kickstarter or another sort of crowdsource funding site like that. If he got money, that could help the project, because he'll be able to hire people to help. And if he didn't, just the exposure, there'd be eyes looking at his project would be a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, that's the other aspect. So there's a lot of things right there. I mean, and it's also something, like you said, because it's an open source type of thing where you're really developing this stuff from the ground up based off of published public file formats that aren't proprietary, you know, that they're documented file formats. I mean, I can't imagine that you'd have too much trouble with that. I mean, you know, like you said, if you were taking actual game code from the companies and using it, that would be a problem. But if you're doing it from scratch like you've been doing it, I don't see what the big issue would be, really.
I'm not a lawyer, so I have
yeah,
no
I don't
clue
either.
At all.
Yeah, me either.
None of us are lawyers. and honestly, it comes down... And that really, that does come down to a lot of the problems with some of this type of development, because things have gotten so corporatized as far as the way stuff's been developed originally. It does make it harder to keep things alive. And frankly, I don't see why they wouldn't, because like you said before, you still have to own the game.
Yeah.
You know, you're still purchased. They're still getting their pound of flesh either way. And actually, they're getting more pounds of flesh because you're providing a means to get it to
them, the platform to other hardware. I mean, there's people who wouldn't ordinarily be buying the game because they're Mac users or Linux users might actually go out and buy the game because now they can use it on their preferred platform.
Yep. And frankly, the game producers themselves would have done these things had they had the ability to financially, you know, with their budget or scope. You know, I know that there was a lot of work being done for Neverwinter Nights 2 for Mac. You know, and they actually did release it on the Mac. However, they didn't ever release the tool set. There was other things that weren't done because of, obviously, budgetary limitations and things like that. But as far as, you know, a game company wanting to release it on as many platforms as possible, they always do. I mean, they definitely want to make sure that they got the most coverage out there because that just sells more copies. So.
Yeah, I'm sure the original developers would like the idea, but I'm not so sure the companies, the legal departments,
something to think about for sure.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yep, definitely. Closing, I want to thank you again for coming on the show and talking about your project, getting it out there a little bit more. Is there anything else that we didn't cover in our questions and whatever else throughout the course of the interview that you'd like to bring up to the community and last final thoughts?
Not really.
All right. Well, you know, as I said, you know, don't be a stranger to the show. Shoot me a line if you have any updates or you have anything else we'd like to cover or just to get out to the community as the days go forward. And we'd be happy to, you know, get that out there, the audience.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're really excited for throw a final thought in. Yeah, we're really excited for the work that you're doing. And I know that a lot of other people, once they become aware of your project, are going to be very excited for what you're doing. And anything else we can do to help you via marketing or whatever else, you know, we would be more than happy to use our social media footprint and any other coverage that we have to do so. And we'll be getting the word out for sure.
Thanks.
Well, Mark, you want to give the closing line?
Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.